This is VOA News. I'm Jim Bertel. The coronavirus continues to have a devastating impact on people around the world. Death tolls are climbing rapidly in Italy, Iran, and the United States. AP's Ben Thomas has the latest numbers.
Running tally by Johns Hopkins University shows some 150 countries now have confirmed cases, more than 308,000 people in all, including more than 13,000 deaths as of Sunday morning. But the numbers are dating quickly. In the U.S., 340 deaths have been reported in all, coming from more than 30 states. New York state officials are searching the globe for medical supplies as confirmed coronavirus cases in the state soar above 10,000, with some 1,600 people hospitalized. Johns Hopkins tally shows well over 26,000 cases around the U.S. I'm Ben Thomas.
Europe is now the epicenter of the coronavirus outbreak as the virus continues to spread. Reuters' Emma McCarthy reports all non-essential businesses in hard-hit Italy have been ordered to close as the country battles the COVID-19 pandemic.
Italian Prime Minister Giuseppe Conte said on Saturday that all businesses in the country must close until April 3rd, except those essential to maintaining the country's supply chain. Italy recorded a jump in deaths from the virus of almost 800 on Saturday, taking the toll in the world's hardest hit country to almost 5,000. In all major Italian cities, soldiers and police forces are increasing the number of roadblocks to better control the population's movements.
That is Reuters' Emer McCarthy reporting. In Africa, Uganda, Angola, and Eritrea are all reporting their first cases of coronavirus, while Rwanda is the first nation in Africa to be placed on lockdown. According to the World Health Organization, more than 1,000 cases have been reported across Africa. For more on the coronavirus, go to voanews.com. This is VOA News. Iran's death toll continues to climb as countries across the Middle East are working to stem the outbreak of coronavirus. Iran is the most affected country in the Middle East, with over 1,600 coronavirus deaths and more than 21,000 people infected. In one of the strictest measures yet, Jordan has ordered all shops to close and all people to stay off the streets until at least Tuesday. Egypt is closing all museums and archaeological sites, including the famed pyramids at Giza, beginning Monday until the end of March. In South Asia, hundreds of millions of Indians stayed at home Sunday, heeding the Prime Minister's appeal for people to self-isolate to contain the coronavirus. U.S. President Donald Trump says there's no need right now for a national shutdown, even as another U.S. state orders its residents to stay home. AP Sagar Magani reports.
New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy says it pains him, but he's telling all 9 million residents not to go out. California, New York, and Illinois, among others, have done the same, and Murphy's urging other governors to follow suit.
We cannot run the risk of residents from one state simply moving their parties or their shopping habits across state lines.
The Trump administration's been knocking down Facebook posts and text messages that a national quarantine is coming. The president says states in Middle America may only have a few cases and don't need to lock down.
It may be a time, I hope that never happens, where we need to take very drastic action. But right now, that's not in the same ballpark.
Sagar Magani, Washington.
People from Australia to Europe and the U.S. are ignoring orders and recommendations to stay at home to help stop the coronavirus from spreading. Now authorities around the world are urging them to start obeying, and enforcement is up. AP's Julie Walker has more.
Resistors are holding corona parties in Germany, going to beaches in France, Australia, and Florida, where some are closed, but others are open, hosting spring breakers. New York's Governor Andrew Cuomo says there's a problem with gatherings in city parks.
You're not Superman, and you're not Superwoman. You can get this virus. And you can transfer the virus.
California Governor Gavin Newsom puts it more bluntly.
Those young people that are still out there on the beaches thinking this is a party, time to grow up, time to wake up, time to recognize it's not just about the old folks, it's about your impact.
That state, like New York and several others, have a stay-at-home order for non-essential workers. I'm Julie Walker.
Croatia was rocked by a large earthquake near the capital Zagreb on Sunday. The prime minister is calling on people to remain outside their homes amid potential aftershocks. For the very latest on the coronavirus, please go to voanews.com or use the VOA mobile app. From Washington, I'm Jim Bertel, VOA News.
welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington.
The president has declared the state of disaster, basically in response to the pandemic, the COVID-19 pandemic.
Malawian President Arthur Peter Mutharika implements new health measures to combat the coronavirus beginning Monday.
So as part of measures to curb and control the spread of the coronavirus in Accra, we realized that the Central Business District acquired some disinfection to make sure that we fight the coronavirus.
Major markets in the Ghanaian capital Accra to close for disinfection as a precautionary measure to fight the coronavirus beginning Monday.
Our own government didn't do much. Our borders and entry points were let loose. What I mean, not enough preparation. Example, putting emergency medical teams at the borders.
And a major Gambian opposition party says the government is not doing enough to protect the people against the coronavirus. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Malawian President Arthur Peter Mutharika has announced new measures which will restrict public gatherings of more than 100 people. They will also close all schools, colleges and universities beginning Monday. The ban affects gatherings including weddings, funerals, church, congregations, rallies as well as government meetings. This after the president declared a state of disaster and earmarked a $20 million fund to help combat the coronavirus if it's detected in the country. Meanwhile, the president swore in his new cabinet Saturday. Critics say it is too bloated and will be a drain on the national purse. For more about the new measures to combat the coronavirus, I reached newly installed Information Minister Mark Botomani in the Malawian capital, Lilongwe.
Hey, so Mark, I understand the president is taking action by closing schools beginning Monday. Talk to me about it.
Yes, indeed. The president has declared the state of disaster, basically in response to the pandemic, the COVID-19 pandemic. As you know that Malawi is very vulnerable to the disease, just like many countries. As a matter of fact, countries around us, Tanzania, Zambia, South Africa, have all been, affected. There are cases there where, people have been found with the disease. So what the president has done is to put up measures so that we should not, first of all, have this disease in the country. But even if we do have, we should find ourselves prepared to put up measures which we can be able to fight the disease.
Well, Mark, some African countries, as part of the measure to combat the spread of the disease, have closed their airports to countries that have been infected with the coronavirus. Will Malawi take such a measure as well as closing down its borders to neighboring countries affected by the disease?
We have not come to a place where we should issue an order to close our borders at the moment. We are still monitoring the situation at the moment. What we have done, and this is contained in the statement of the president yesterday, is to restrict people from traveling to countries that are, affected, or should we say are infected by the disease or by the virus at the moment, and to restrict free movement of people except in the SADC region, that the Southern African Development Community, But we, like I said, we are still monitoring the situation. We have not come to a place where we would order the closure of our borders. As a matter of fact, and I'm sure you know that the president established a cabinet committee on COVID-19, and this committee has been involved in going around in our airports and indeed in our border posts to just see how prepared we are as a country to make sure that the virus should not enter this country.
So, Mark, how is the education campaign going so far by the government, and are you engaging the population to change their ways of doing things, including handshakes that could easily help spread the disease from happening?
If you look at the order or the statement that was given by His Excellency the President, it does not just mention schools, but it covers a whole lot of sectors. Such as political party meetings or rallies, churches, mosques, and all other gatherings where people gather more than 100 in number. What we are doing as government and through the committee I mentioned, the Cabinet Committee on COVID-19, is to enhance civic education in all sectors. And our plea is that people comply with the measures that are being put in place. Already we are seeing a number of sectors complying, the business community, churches, and others complying with measures such as washing of hands or frequent washing of hands and advising people not to, to shake hands and all that. So there's already a commitment on the part of, sectors to comply with the orders. But like I said, civic education is of paramount importance at this point in time, and hoping that even schools, will comply to closing for the time being. Such are the measures that are being put in place.
Meanwhile, Mark, you were officially sworn in Saturday as the new information minister, along with some members who the president appointed to the cabinet. What was the charge given to you by the president, since you will be in this new cabinet for a few months before the upcoming presidential election rerun?
First of all, I must say that we are not racing against time. Our commitment is to serve the people of Malawi. So the question of, having the rerun in the next few months does not apply, because we have been sworn in to serve the people of Malawi and to implement the policies and programs that government has put in place. As you know, that we are in the 2019 and 2020 financial year as a country. And so the president has challenged us to make sure that all the projects or programs that we had set out at the beginning of the financial year must be completed. So each and every ministry must ensure that our commitment to the people, the manifesto that we had put up to the people, is indeed walked through and is completed, and is completed on time. We are just basically continuing what we already started, because this president, as you know, that is a very committed man, and he always wants to see things done. He's an action-oriented president, and so we've got to run alongside him in terms of implementing the programs that are there. So, once again, the question of saying that, whether we'll have elections in the next few months or not does not apply. Our commitment is to make sure that we serve the people of Malawi with diligence and with dedication.
So what is your reaction to those who are saying that this cabinet is bloated and that it appears that it was politically motivated to garner support for the president in the election rerun, because the UDF people have been accommodated in the cabinet, so he will broaden his base for the election?
The Malawi Constitution gives powers to the president to choose members of his cabinet as and when he sees it fit. So in his wisdom, this time around, he has increased the numbers, the number of ministers in his cabinet, and he's justified by the constitution. So he has not broken any law. He's within the confines of the law in trying to fulfill that mandate, because his desire is to make sure that he puts up a dedicated team to serve the people of Malawi. Now, the issue of members of the UDF joining cabinet, well, this has been necessitated by the alliance that has been there. As you know, that the DPP, the Democratic Progressive Party, has entered into alliance, an alliance with the United Democratic Front. So it was only needful for the president to consolidate his base in having the UDF members in the cabinet, in order that because we share common ground, and therefore there are people that can help him to run this country better. So he's justified to do that. He's consolidating the efforts. And I believe that it's going to be a very, very formidable force that can serve the people of Malawi better.
Mark Butomani is the newly installed Malawian Information Minister. He spoke with me from the capital, Lilongwe. Major markets in the Ghanaian capital, Accra, will be closed for fumigation on Monday. Mayor Mohammed Ajay Sowah says the markets and public places in the city will be disinfected as a precautionary effort to combat the coronavirus disease. It also forms part of a recent presidential directive which ensures the implementation of strategic measures to contain and prevent the spread of COVID-19. The mayor further states that citizens should frequently wash their hands with soap and cover their mouths when coughing. The markets are expected to be open for business activities on Tuesday. To learn more about the fumigation action, I reach the mayor of Accra, Mohammed Ajay Sowah.
So as part of measures to curb and control the spread of the coronavirus in Accra, we started off with a massive maths education, and then we taking some drastic steps to ensure compliance of hygiene at public places. And then we realized that the central business district, which takes care of over 3 million people during the day, where all the informal markets are, requires some disinfection to make sure that we fight the coronavirus in a manner that it will not enter into the central business district, neither does it also spread. In pursuit of that, we decided to close down all the informal bigger markets in Accra, i.e. Katamanto, Okanshi, Mokola, Agbubloshi, Kwasia Jasu, and all the major markets in Accra, so that we can disinfect the markets on Monday, and then business commences again on Tuesday. But that's just the beginning. All other public spaces will also be disinfected, and then that includes schools, mosques, churches, and other areas as well. Monday is just the beginning, and whilst we are closing down the market, but we'll continue to other parts of Accra, and hopefully government is supporting it so that it will be a nationwide exercise.
So, Mr. Mayor, how are residents in Accra and surrounding areas, particularly in Accra, responding to your call for a change in attitude and mindset in an effort to combat this coronavirus disease?
Well, this particular exercise scheduled for Monday to close down the markets in Accra has been received with overwhelming support, because initially we met all the leaders of the markets with the Minister for Local Government, who interacted with them.
Some people are suggesting that it's human who carry the coronavirus or the disease. So they wonder why the initiative to fumigate the market. Any particular reason why the Accra Metropolitan Administration under your leadership decided to go this route? And what significance and impact do you anticipate it having on the people or the residents of Accra?
I mean, well, currently, I mean, the disease is spreading. We don't know who has it and who do not have it. And what we are doing is to curb or contain its spread. So if people have been touching things and others also go to touch and they pick the virus and they go with it. So it has started, and we think that these are the major steps that we needed to take to be able to get it. It is not only through human to human contact, but if you have the virus and you are carrying it and you touch on something, somebody also touches it, you will pick it up and then it will go. So that's the reason why we are disinfecting. We are not fumigating. We are disinfecting the whole market. And as I indicated, we'll continue to take steps to go to other public places as well.
So, Mr. Mayor, talk to me about how this measure you are implementing dovetails into the president's directive and measures being implemented to combat the virus nationwide.
Well, the president directive, it's largely to direct the local authorities to quickly activate the public health emergency response teams to further handle the issues at the local level. And it is in pursuit of that and further directives that is why we are taking all these decisions. One, to intensify our campaign. Two, to institute measures for people to comply with high hygienic practices. And then finally, to make sure that there are facilities that can take care of people, which of course we are supporting the Ghana Health Services to do that.
So what is your message to the people or residents of Accra in anticipation of this exercise you will be undertaking on Monday?
We are generally asking the people of Accra to brace themselves up for measures that will help to curb or contain the spread of the virus. It's more important also to state that self-preservation is important, and individually and collectively we should take responsibility to maintain high hygienic standards, and more also importantly take note that the disease is real, and as a government, as a local authority, we'll do everything within our powers to protect the general citizen.
Mohamed Ajay Sowa is the mayor of the Ghanaian capital, Accra. He spoke with me from Accra. The Gambian opposition party, the Alliance for Patriotic Reorientation and Construction, or APRC, says it appears the government in Banjul is not serious about controlling the spread of the coronavirus. This after the authorities say they were looking for 14 people who are under quarantine but broke out of the hotel where they were being held. They were about They were among 32 passengers who arrived in Gambia from the UK last week. This after the West African country declared its first official case of the disease. Badudu Jah, a spokesperson for the opposition APRC, tells me the government should have ensured proper security to prevent those under quarantine from breaking out and spreading the disease.
Thank you, Mr. Peter. The question is really relevant. What I really meant is, as corona, the new spreads throughout the world, from Asia, mainland China, going across Europe and to other continents, it's known worldwide. Everybody became really worried about it. Certain countries, they took measures that would definitely make sure that people within that are not infected would be protected. Our own government didn't do much. Our borders and entry points were let loose. What I mean, not enough preparation. Example, putting emergency medical teams at the borders, quarantine measures to make sure that people that are coming through or into the Gambia would be checked thoroughly to ensure that they are not infected before they are allowed into the country. None of that happened until we reported one case that is a young lady who traveled from UK to the Gambia when it was detected that she has the virus. That's when we started taking measures in trying to prevent. And our airport is not closed. Our entry points are not well equipped to standards compared to what is happening in other countries. And a few days ago, we've seen a video of passengers who were pushing and pulling with airport security, refusing to be quarantined to check whether they're infected or not. They have to force their way out. And we heard in the media where 14 passengers who were suspected or who were supposed to be screened and quarantined to make sure they don't have the virus, who were taken to a hotel called Golden Hotel, who later have to break down the hotel gate, and all 14 passengers went loose. These are reasons why we said that government is not really serious about it. They are not taking necessary measures and steps to make sure that people will be protected from the virus.
So, Dudu, why is your party saying that the government is not serious about the coronavirus issue?
Mr. Peter, like I said in my first audio, we received 14 passengers who were supposed to be quarantined. Now they're nowhere to be found and they're in the country. If the airport was closed, how do they have access into the country? And I told you, there's a video that went viral that people who are pushing and pulling with airport security, refusing to, you know, undergo normal routine checkups for them to at least verify whether they have the virus or not. If the airport was shut down, we'll not receive passengers from other European countries. It's later that they made a list of countries within Europe and Asia who are not allowed. But our next door neighbor, Senegal, they're still entering the Gambia and using the road, using land transport going into Senegal, because Senegal's airport has shut down their airport. They're not welcoming or entertaining any flights, but they are having transit through Gambia and going to Senegal. So when did they close the airport? After some people making headways. This is a list of countries stated that they are not allowed. But in that list, you will not find Senegal, who are our next door neighbors.
Badudu, the government has implemented new measures to combat the disease, including closing down the airport. Just like other neighboring countries, including Sierra Leone, have done. Why do you still think that it is not taking the matter serious as your party criticizes the government?
Thank you once again, Mr. Peter. Like you just said, they are looking for them. When will they find them? That is the question. Are they really infected? We don't even know. What if they do? How many people will they interact with? For instance, if they have the virus, they could infect other people or transfer the virus to them before they will be found. You know, all these are issues that could have been avoided. If, for instance, security measures were also put in place, go to other countries, they involve the, for example, the security to help and assist those that are at these entry points to make sure that people will comply with what the law says. But when you enter a country, you cannot take security measures only with airport security, who are not armed or equipped with anything that would give them the privilege to exercise their security rights and to make sure people abide by the law. Yes, resources are limited. That should be the very reason that you take things beforehand. That is, preventive measures should have been in place. In the first place, you cannot take people to a hotel without security. Imagine a hotel gate being broken down. Where is the security of that hotel? Nobody is there to sound the alarm until they're on the search. People are on the run and they're searching for them. When will they find them? Will they ever find them? That is the question here.
Badudu, the government is on record to have launched an education campaign to educate all Gambians about the danger and about the need to protect themselves against this coronavirus disease to prevent its spread. A lot of people, including civil society organizations and opposition parties, have hailed the effort of the government. They are saying that your criticisms are just politically motivated. How do you respond to that?
Thank you once again, Mr. Peter. This is way beyond politics. This is about the Gambia. The coronavirus knows no politics. It's not about who belongs to what party. This is keeping Gambians safe from the said virus. Faking measures, the question is when. There are certain African countries who are yet to register a single case about this coronavirus because they took measures at the appropriate time to make sure that it is prevented. Like I am telling you, our next door neighbor who are very close to us, that's why we said next door neighbor, we're not shutting down for them to have access to entering. They have shut down their own airport, meaning even us as Gambians, we cannot land at their airport. But ours is open to them. That's the angle I am talking about. And you cannot wait until something happens, then you get up and say you're taking measures. It could have been avoided. It was supposed to have done earlier. Like I said, this is not about criticizing the government, but it is us as Gambians having concern. That's why I'm raising the issue of the 14 passengers who are on the run. They're let loose. When will they be found? Will they ever be found? Will it be too late? Perhaps before they are found, they could have transferred this virus or infected other people.
Dudu Jah is the spokesperson for the Gambian Opposition Party, the Alliance for Patriotic Reorientation and Construction, or APRC. He spoke with me from the capital, Banjul. As the world battles the coronavirus pandemic, the disease is posing a challenge to many businesses. For VOA, Gift Agiriga in the Nigerian capital, Abuja, looks at how the outbreak of the virus is affecting the hospitality industry, sex workers, and the parliament.
Nigeria's government has banned large social and religious gatherings for fear of community spread of the coronavirus that causes the COVID-19 disease. Two groups of workers in particular are feeling the effects of the ban: hospitality industry workers and sex workers. Hotel bookings by vacationers and corporate conference attendees are being postponed indefinitely. Nkechi Bosa is the general manager of a popular hotel. Bosa laments the low patronage the industry has been experiencing since the outbreak, especially from international clients.
It's shocking. It's going to shock us in this morning. I don't know how we're going to take care of our monthly bills. We had about 7 programs that were supposed to be held in the hotel that have all been cancelled. Not one of them is going to be held anymore.
There are only several hundred confirmed COVID-19 cases on the African continent, only a few dozen in Nigeria. But given the crowded cities in most African countries, there are concerns small outbreaks could quickly spread and overwhelm impoverished healthcare systems. Several countries on the continent, like Nigeria, have curtailed travel and public gatherings. The restrictions have sex workers in Abuja worried they will lose so much income they won't be able to support themselves. The business is on the decline now, and some workers have put up with unsafe situations out of desperation. A street-based sex worker, Joy, says she is aware of the coronavirus and the risks she is taking, but she has to work harder to find clients.
I'm hustling. I start on the streets, hustle for my daily bread. The kind of business we do, we are scared because of coronavirus. We are not happy about it, but for now, coronavirus is raining everywhere. We are afraid.
Even Nigerian's parliament has been affected. It has suspended all public hearings. Senator Smart Adeyemi is the chairman, Senate Committee on Aviation. He said the outbreak has also affected the performance of some legislators and kept them away from their constituents.
I can tell you that some of our vacant positions have to be scheduled. And for long standing, everybody has to be prepared. We are more at this deadly disease. No doubt that it will be suspended by lawmakers.
Adeyemi commended the Nigerian government on the steps it is taking to curb the spread of the virus and a travel ban placed on 13 countries that have large outbreaks of the virus. For VOA News, this is Gift Agiriga from Abuja, Nigeria.
A new report released by Afrobarometer shows that a majority of Africans are concerned that their governments are failing to provide clean water and sanitation. Health experts say it is of a major concern due in part to the spread of the coronavirus as well as other infectious diseases. The report was released ahead of World Water Day Sunday. According to Afrobarometer, the countries show little progress in meeting the target set by the UN Sustainable Development Goals, which seek to ensure availability and sustainable management of water and sanitation for all. For more about the report, I read Sibosiso Nkoma, the head of communications at Afrobarometer.
From our findings, so this new report we just released today, and it looks at water and sanitation in 34 African countries. But what we're finding is that more than half of Africans are saying that their governments are failing when it comes to one of their top priorities, which is the provision of clean water and sanitation services. And about half are actually saying that they went without clean water for home use during the previous year. These results come from the surveys in between 2016 and 2018. And this is also quite concerning, considering that proper hygiene is one of the key things with the spread of coronavirus and other infectious diseases.
So ahead of the World Water Day, the Afrobarometer has come up with a poll about Africans expressing concern that their governments are failing them when it comes to the provision of clean water and sanitation services. Talk to me about this finding.
Of course, experiences are not the same across all countries, but we see that on average about half of people actually have to leave their yards or compounds to actually access water, and that only one-fourth have access to sewage infrastructure. Rural residents are the ones who actually suffer the most disadvantages when it comes to access to water and sanitation. And we find that one in five Africans who tried to obtain utility services from government during the previous year report that they had to pay a bribe. And in 20 out of the 34 countries, the majority say the government is doing a poor job of providing these services. So the data we're utilizing is a mix in this case of observational data plus also perceptions data, so where we conducted interviews. In terms of the observational data, one of the questions is about looking at whether there's a piped water system in an enumeration area. And you'll notice that we noticed that in the same countries where people were complaining the most about sanitation and water being something that is lacking, you also notice that that infrastructure is not really there, or it's there at a small scale.
Did the respondents specify why the governments have been unable to meet these concerns they have about water and sanitation?
For citizens, I think they've already made it clear that the most important problems are unemployment, health, infrastructure, and water and sanitation. So water and sanitation is number four, but it's related to all the other three as well. So I think the key is infrastructure. And previous analysis that Afrobarometer has done shows that there's a correlation between infrastructure being placed in communities and an improvement in the economic, social, and even political situation. So, for example, if you put more roads, you actually see more an increase in business. You see an increase in people being able to access other services. So I think it's really key that water pipes are put in and sewage is also put in, because if you don't do that, you're going to be stuck with the same situation. Also, the lack of infrastructure in this period where we are being told we need to wash our hands with soap and water. What happens when you don't have access to that clean water? You can't wash your hands, so you become more vulnerable to disease. And it's really important to have those facilities in place, because if, for example, the coronavirus gets into areas where people don't have infrastructure, we're looking at a big disaster.
How critical is this report in the face of this COVID-19 coronavirus disease ongoing at the moment, particularly when hand washing and the use of water is critical to help in combating this disease?
You know, help themselves with something very basic, clean water.
So how will the government in Africa use this data collected by Afrobarometer as part of its policy implementation mechanism to help address this challenge?
We hope so. I think it's important for vital information to be shared, and the policymakers and those with influence utilize it to make African lives much better.
Sibosise Nkoma is the head of communications at Afrobarometer. He spoke with me from Johannesburg, South Africa.
Celebrate the sounds of Africa today, yesterday, and tomorrow. That's our mission in your show, Music Time in Africa. Hello, I'm your host, Heather Maxwell. Join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC and discover the best Pan-African music in the world. We play it all right here. Only the best on VOA.
This is the Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Under Secretary General for Political Affairs, and music from our African collection. Now let's take a closer look at Africa, the problems, the prospect in time of conflict, in time of peace. Here's one man's point of view with Dr. James Jonah, former UN Under Secretary General for Political Affairs. Hello, Dr. Jonah.
Good evening, Africa. Setting aside the questionable notion that black and brown people are less likely to be infected by the coronavirus pandemic, African governments and people must observe what is happening around the world and see how other governments and people are coping with this pandemic. It is true that at the present time, the incidence of the virus in Africa is very low. But so it is in Latin America and in the Caribbean. So this should not prevent governments and people to look and see, for example, how China handled the situation. When this virus broke out initially, China used what was termed a draconian measure to lock down a city of 11 million Wuhan and restrict movement of people, closing factories, closing schools. Now we know that these were good measures, and today the incidence of the virus is receding in China. We also see what happened in South Korea. South Korea present another model. When South Korea was confronted with the spread of this virus, they embarked on massive testing of the population to determine who has or does not have the virus. Even though in the end, the number of affected South Koreans was small, at least the government was able to have a good picture on how best it could tackle the situation. Outside of China and South Korea, many Western countries felt these were draconian measures that they could not accept in a democratic situation. And they were slow to adopt these measures. But Italy presented another model of what slowness could entail. When it became very difficult to stop the spread of the virus in Italy, the government initially locked down northern Italy. But still, social movement continue and the spread of the virus continue. So the government was obliged to lock down the entire country of Italy, and is still locked down. And now they are trying to see how best they can control the virus. It is because of the high incidence of the virus in Italy in particular that WHO announced last week that Europe is now the epicenter of the virus and no longer China. We have seen also that Spain is encountering difficulties, yet many European governments are working on the plan of containment and mitigation, but many predict that they may have to move more towards the Italian model. The United States present a different situation. The U.S. is a complex society, and controlling it has proved to be difficult. It is only in recent days that the federal government has started working with the state governments to handle the situation of the spread of the virus. And schools have been closed, sports have been postponed. And these are things are just at the beginning. And many believe things will get worse before they get better. What is happening in Tehran will be more similar to what may happen in Africa. Tehran, or Iran, has been under a campaign of maximum military and economic pressure. And because of that, its economy is at a very low ebb and is not in the position to cope with the virus. This may account for the fact that it is increasing very high in Tehran. Iran has just requested the IMF for a loan of $11 billion to be able to cope with this virus. But the government is worried that the U.S. might use its veto power in the IMF to block it. Just a few days ago, President Xi of China committed China to help Iran deal with the issue of the virus. Now, in Africa, we said there are some numbers of the incidents, but mostly in northern Africa, near the Mediterranean. That is understandable, because it's near to Europe. But governments should embark on massive civic education to let the people understand what would happen if, in any event, the virus should spread in the African continent. This may be the time when perhaps mythology may be better than reality, and hopefully the African continent might be spared this pandemic. I thank you.
That was One Man's Point of View, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. It's Sunday on Nightline Africa, and this is the time we get to relax and reflect. A flashback with music from the continent.
Bye.
Was our Sunday music spot. Hope you enjoy the music from Nightline Africa here at the English service of the Voice of America in Washington. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Hope you enjoy the program tonight. As you know by now, we are on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, Managing Editor Shaka Sali, Producer Douglas Impuga, we say thanks for joining us and remember, as the elders say, one who eats alone cannot describe the taste of the food to others. I'm your host, Peter Clotter in Washington. Good evening, Africa.